Following the public agitation against the implementation of the mandatory vehicle towing fee, a number of fatal vehicular accidents have occurred on some of the country's highways caused by moving vehicles running into stationary ones. Yesterday's fatal accident involving Kumasi Asante Kotoko team bus on the Accra-Kumasi Highway after a Premier League match in Accra has again raised the need for authorities to be proactive in towing broken vehicles on our roads. Following the suspension, not much has been heard on the policy. Tonight, we find out the state of the policy and steps being taken by authorities to raid our highways and, for that matter, the roads of broken down vehicles. We are joined on the line by the Director of Communications of the National Road Safety Commission, Kwame Ituahene. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening. Thanks for having us.
And thanks to... Is the vehicle towing fee policy abandoned?
Well, I wouldn't say so. If you reflect on the communique that came from the Ministry of Transport, it was clear that we needed to suspend commencement and engage further on some of the concerns that the public had raised.
Kwame, your voice is very low. If you can speak up a bit for us.
Yes, sir. One thing is that if you reflect on the communique that was issued at a point of suspension, the Ministry had given indication that we should suspend the commencement whilst we engaged on some of the concerns that the public had raised. So, I mean, essentially that is what is happening. Unfortunately, the statement did not indicate when a new date. So a new date probably will be announced in the course of the consultation.
So how far would the public consultation?
No, we haven't. We've asked. Soon after the announcement, the Parliamentary Select Committee on Transport took responsibility to try to understand what has happened. It's a new committee, unlike the old, which expired in 2016. So they tried to look at the law, ask a number of questions, including the fact that we had gone round to do a number of engagements with stakeholders. This week, for instance, on Monday, they requested for attendance record of the engagements that we have had in order to verify whether indeed there was as much support from the stakeholder engagement. So, I mean, there's some work is being done, except that I'm unable to say exactly when it should be concluded and whether we'll come back to have the project in the same shape or with some variation.
So in the interim, what is the Commission doing about breakdown vehicles on our roads?
Unfortunately, our hands are tied. Because we'll try to explain over time. It is not an option that we have just popped up out of nowhere. We got to this stage out of trying other options, which didn't quite work. For instance, when people talk about people should tow when they get disabled and that kind of thing. The last 2 weeks, we've had two serious incidents in Koko and Bali. I think we should be interested to ask whether within the vicinity of Koko and Bali, whether there are these tracks available. They are not. So it is out of a certain constraint that matters, obvious cases of vehicle owners out of their responsibility, abandoning their vehicle. There are also cases where out of genuine cases of scarcity of these trucks, we are exposed to the risk that leads us into trouble. So at this point, sadly enough, we can only appeal to motorists to be careful and also to deploy their warning triangles in the event that we get into these conditions. In areas like Accra, Kumasi, the big cities where these trucks are available, I mean, we would continue to engage these private companies to provide some form of assistance.
So the impression I'm getting is that the state hasn't got anything of a sort in place to tow vehicles that are disabled on our roads?
As far as I know, my brother, the Ghana Police Service do not have one functional towing truck. The last time they had anything close was in 2007. Two trucks procured for them through the National Road Safety Commission by the World Bank. So as I speak with you today, the police service, which is required by law to provide this service, do not have the trucks. Private companies, yes. In Accra, you may have the benefit of seeing some of the low-bed trucks and their likes. But for instance, the truck that gave us problem in Bali and Koko, USMCI, you need a certain high tonnage capacity tow truck. And they are not often the areas where private persons would like to invest with pleasure because it is capital intensive. So you need to have a certain scheme that will try to draw attention to make good business sense for private involvement. Because the state, for God knows how long, haven't found it encouraging enough to do that, to invest in those areas. So that is where we are. It is not as though the state has capacity to do it. And we have said that, no, we don't want the offer from the state. So we want to create a scheme for private sector to milk the public. No, there's a genuine concern, which is that in several urban areas apart from Accra, Kumasi, where you can find some of these trucks, you hardly can even count up one touring truck because it doesn't make sense for business people to invest so much and put a truck, for instance, at Bali or in Koko. So you need to put in place a certain kind of scheme which will make it attractive. And that is exactly what, out of some consultation with our stakeholders, we try to introduce. But for good reason or good or bad reason, I should say, there were these agitations and we have had to suspend it.
Are there implications if one decides or leaves his or her vehicles that is disabled on the road for some number of days?
Yes, let me tell you this. Remember that in 2007, the run-up to election, out of similar agitations, were forced to review the penalty for traffic offenses. It was reduced by some 90%. So today, if I leave my vehicle at Nkoko, if I get a breakdown at Nkoko, I would have to go to tell, inform the police. I mean, the police is duty-bound to provide a truck. The truck is not available. So after an hour or two, the police is required by law to initiate prosecution. But tell me, if you had gone to the police for assistance and they have failed to assist you, do you think that the police will have the courage enough to even initiate prosecution against you? It is obvious, you know. Be as it may, even if they were to do that, the sanction for leaving your vehicle on the road or the sanction for trying to fix your vehicle on the road is not as deterrent enough, because if you compare the sanction to the cost, assuming if you get the service and the vehicle owner or the truck owner will even charge you 1,500 or 2,000 cedis, you will pay far less than that if you were to be sanctioned, because the penalty regime has been reduced. So that is where we are. The system have made it, if you like, more attractive for people to be responsible out of similar application over time. So when my vehicle breaks down, I go to the police, I'm unable to get assistance. Even when I get assistance, the cost is so much that if I compare the cost of the service as against trying to fix the vehicle on the road, maybe I'll take the other option. I'll run the risk of dealing with the solution or the problem on the road at the risk of penalty or sanction, okay, which may not be too deterrent. So that is where we are now.
And the unfortunate incident involving Kumasi Asante Kotoko Football Club, what has the commission been told?
Well, we've had various reports. And on the one hand, we told that there was a stationary vehicle. On the other hand, a moving slow vehicle. You see, you need eyewitness accounts. Sometimes you need to talk to these same persons who have been injured. Many of them are very traumatized at this point. So it will take a little bit of time to be able to validate these concerns that we may have. Oftentimes, we'll try to get into the situation, ask a few questions with assistance of the police and other trained cash investigators. So I'm sure in the course of time, we will get a full blown picture of what actually happened. But whether it was disabled vehicle or slow moving truck, I think that, I mean, these are genuine concerns. I mean, okay. It happens on a daily basis. The difference this time is that it's got to be associated with a very familiar and popular class.
All right.
And with people of high repute, so people are talking about it. But the reality is that on a daily basis, poor, vulnerable people who do not have the pleasure of these attachments suffer these deaths and injuries unannounced and without any comment from anyone. And those are the people that caused these policies were intended to us.
All right. Kwame, I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Very grateful. Kwame Etuahene is the Director of Communications with the Ghana of the National Road Safety Commission. Also joining us on the line is the Chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Roads and Transport, a Member of Parliament for Ayin Swano, Samuel Ayepi. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, my brother. How are you?
Very well, and thanks for your time. How far have you gone with consultations concerning the suspended implementation of the mandatory vehicle towing fee?
Well, firstly, good evening to your listeners this evening. Yes, we've met almost all the players in the transport industry, the road transport industry, especially the... even yesterday, we had a meeting with the other parties or the stakeholders of the road transport industry. The GPRTU was there, the Ghana National Road Transport Coordinating Council is the umbrella body of some of the road transport unions in this country. They were there. We had the Consumer Protection Agency rep was there. We met the written trucks and a company that was also in a towing business in this country. We met the DNI towing services from Kumasi. We had the Nene Amiri, who is an advocate for road transport. So we had discussions with them yesterday. And then before we met them yesterday, we have met the Ghana, the Road Safety Commission. We have met the Ministry of Transport. We've met the main private operator of this towing process. We've met the DVLA. So a lot of consultations has actually gone on. And then we are yet to take a decision by considering the input or response that we've had from all the stakeholders we have had discussions with so far.
And does the input signal possibly return to the policy?
Yes. Well, for all that we have met, all the stakeholders in the industry say that the program is so perfect, the program is good, it's a good project, we should do it. But they have concerns. Let me give you a typical example. The GPRTU was saying that, yeah, the fees were high, and also commercial drivers paying twice in a year. That was their main concern. Apart from that, they admitted that, yes, people are dying on roads, and their members are also dying by running their vehicles into stationary vehicles on the road. So this program is good. They think it's coming to help them. Their main concern was the fee, which they think they suggested 50% downwards of the fees. Ghana Roads, Ghana National Roads Coordinating Council, which is the umbrella body of other road transport unions other than GPRT, also came in. They raised a similar concern, saying that they were expecting such an project to start because Ghana Police Service started. It wasn't successful. They have a private organization that also came in towing disabled vehicles on the road. It wasn't successful. So looking at this concept, they think it's a good concept that we should do. Their concern was also the fee, which we suggested that if something could be done about it. And then we had also private individuals who are also in the towing business. They were entertaining fears that when this project that is going to lap their business. But in the agreement and also in the LI, it indicates clearly that the parent company is going to absorb by subletting part of the contract to such more towing services, of which equipment will be provided by the main parent company to assist them expand and also change the equipment or the trucks they are using in towing the vehicle. So that explanation was also made to them. And then we also met the Blue Safety Commission. We got to know that not enough education went on well before the rolling out of the project. So we also asked them to go back and try to consult, sensitize the general public before coming out. We can use the National Commission for Civic Education and other institutions and organizations to go and educate. I also told the GPRC that, yes, when they come to a roundtable discussion, they come with the executives. But when information of that nature is given to them, they fail to go and explain it to their members down there. So when projects that we all think can help is introduced, then it tends to be new to their members. So we also ask them that the information that they've had from us, they should quickly go and then relate that information to their members down there. We are yet to meet the minister after the consultation with the stakeholders.
Okay.
Maybe by Monday we'll meet the minister and put the proposals that we have gathered from the other stakeholders and our position as a committee on routes and transport to the minister. We don't have the mandate to ask the minister to reduce or to increase what or to start or to stop the project. Rather, we can propose and advise the minister in consultation will the president take a decision on this.
Well, Behind the News will certainly follow on that next week. But what appears clearly on the ground is that people are becoming consciously careless. You go to the spot, they drink, they sing, that they are getting drunk, and they are calling on God to come and take charge of the steer. And the implications are dire. So in the meantime, what can be put in place?
Well, I'm saying that road safety is a shared responsibility. It's not one person. Even when this project of the towing process starts, or the project starts, it is not 100% sure that it's going to make our road 100% safe, unless we, the road users and other stakeholders, play our part in ensuring safety on our roads. Let me give a very typical example and use the Kotoko accident yesterday as a typical example. We a vehicle is parked, whether it's on the shoulders of the road or on the road. And a simple road traffic regulation says that when you don't see 40 meters ahead of you, don't go. When it's night, when your lamps are poor, when there's fog, when you can't see well, and 40 meters from your vehicle, an estimated 40 meters away from your vehicle, you don't see, you either slow down your speed or you stop. It's just simple road regulations. So what happened? They interviewed one of the passengers who was involved in this Kotoko accident. He said that he saw the car, see the car was going, as if it was not going. So if the passenger saw the car, what happened to the driver? He didn't see. Or he was also thinking that the vehicle was a moving vehicle. And if a moving vehicle, you are getting closer, he didn't see. Was the driver sleeping? We should also ask this question. Was he tired? How long has he been driving?
All right.
He brought the players from Kumasi. They played a match. They should have spent the night in a car. No, they decided to go back. He was traveling. Was he tired? These are questions that we have to ask. Then the vehicle that was parked also on the road, what happened? Was it 40? Was the driver tired and think he can park anywhere and rest? If you can rest, there are so many rest stops on the road. So what happened, he didn't stop and park in one of the rest of and that. So these are things I think we can...
All right.
The education is going on. The awareness has been created. But the human behavior is what I think we all, the users of the road, must put our heads together and change our attitude. Other than that, whatever program that we put in place will not make our road very safe.
Right.
So we should, as a country, as motorists, as stakeholders, play our part. The law enforcement, was there any police patrol going around? Did they see the vehicle parked on the road? What did you do about it?
All right. Honorable, we want to thank you very much. But so much work for you. We'll be coming to you time and again because so many issues on the road that I'm sure the whole program will not give us enough time to delve into. Thank you very much for talking to us. Samuel Ayepe is the chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Roads and Transport and member of parliament for Ayin Suano. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also on the line is a road safety consultant and vice president of the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport, Godfred Achia Dakwa. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Yeah, good evening. Good evening to the listeners too.
Well, you kicked against the implementation of the vehicle towing policy. If I'm right, what then will you be making of incidents of accidents caused by disabled vehicles?
Thank you very much for that brilliant question. We did not kick against the towage policy. We kicked against the implementation of the policy. That was we made clear. Both myself and my organization and the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport, our stands are clear. The towage policy is a good policy, but the implementation should be done in such a way that nobody will create monopoly in such a situation. But this type of towage system is being practiced in so many places in the world. If nothing at all, you can even look at UK or US. It is there. And we want those best practices we also be duplicated here, but not to empower one organization to do it. We have come up, started this off, transportation, logistics and transport is coming up with a paper. We are seriously discussing this matter at our government council level, and we are going to also produce our paper on the stick on it. So we are for it. That let that towage system work. People should have their own vehicles, the towage companies, registered under a DVLA, operate such a way that vehicle owners would subscribe
to this
organization so that they can do the towage for them. And then again, whether towage is being monopolized or not monopolized, there's some of these vital vehicles on the road would occur. It would definitely occur. But should a vehicle damage a broken down vehicle be stationary on the road and a driver driving into a stationary vehicle, let's look at that psyche. It's abnormal.
But if you are rooting for people to subscribe, in the event of an accident, the person might not be that conscious. Again, the police people will tell you that if you go closer to such a vehicle, you are tampering with accidents. So how will the process be faster?
No, I mean, if a car has broken down on the way, and you, a driver, conscious driver, driving on that motorway, or that way, and you are telling me that you do not see the vehicle, you run into it, I have the problem with that fight. That psychology of that driver is what I'm questioning about. That behavior, that attitude of the driver is what I'm questioning about. And you can provide one towage vehicle for each of the 100 kilometers radius distance on the road by providing the towage vehicle. Such things will happen. So the point is, the drivers are the people we have to work on such a way that they are psychic. Will be changed. Their attitude and behavior will be changed. All the incidents that has been happening, when you analyze it, it is either the person who put the car on that bad list without making enough indication to let people know, or the driver who is also driving and either is tired. He's on his cell phone,
he's surfing on the phone, he's just listening to music, he's taking a CD, or any of such things. His perfect mind would cause the driver to run speedy. So he just drives to cause that meeting. But why should the driver behave the way they do?
On our roads, it appears people are no longer respecting signs, even on vehicles. If somebody wants to give indication of overtaking or not, people are not respecting that. On our highways, three lanes, the speed lanes, and nobody cares. Everybody, you know, that's what he or she wants. Who is to blame?
In fact, when a driver violates the road traffic regulation or the laws on the road, the person who should be blamed is the police officer. They are, it is their duty to make sure that they maintain law and order on the road, because they know that we know that there will be violators of the law. And if there is violators of the law, we don't give our civil rights to arrest anybody. So there's the mandate of the police to make sure that they apprehend those people and deal with them.
Are we not expecting too much of our police?
That is their job. That is why the taxpayers' money is being taken from them to make sure that our roads are safe. So it's not too much. The numbers, look, road crashes cost 1.6% of the national GDP. My brother, check 1.6% of Ghana's national GDP and see its value. So the amount, the money being lost from people dying, the hospitalization, the medical treatment, all those things, the damage to the vehicles, is a huge sum that is causing to the nation. So if the nation is serious and going to fight road accidents, my brother, then if there's the MCTD system that are welfare inadequate, or if there are some logistics that we need to provide to this police for them to do their work well, the nation must be serious and make sure that this type of things are provided.
All right. Right. We are very grateful for your time on our show tonight, sir. Godfred Achia Dakwa is a road safety consultant and the vice president of the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. And on the police, quite a sad one. The regional police command has confirmed the shooting of two police personnel at La Paz, a suburb of Accra, earlier today. The two police personnel were shot by two unidentified men said to be on motorbike, currently on the run. The suspects were believed to have later abandoned their bike and snatched a vehicle and sped off. So what has the police gathered so far on what can best be described as a Hollywood-style gun attack? Joining us on the line is the public relations officer of the Greater Accra Regional Police Command, ASP Efia Tenge. Good evening, ASP, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, sir.
And our condolence to the police service.
Thank you.
Can you give us an account of what actually happened at La Paz today?
Yes, thank you for your concern. But unfortunately, I'll not be able to give you a vivid account of what happened because of the information overflow and the fact that we are also working to ensure that we present what is factual and also what will be well appreciated by the public. But what the police can confirm is that two of our men who were on their routine motorbike patrol just afternoon were shot by two unidentified men, after which they were sent to the hospital, but unfortunately one of them could not survive it. And the other is presently receiving treatment at the hospital. However, information available to the police indicated that these robbers also snatched a saloon vehicle and sped off in order to escape arrest or to prevent arrest. Then again, we also know that we are also putting measures in place to get these people arrested.
So what's the state of the other one responding to treatment?
Okay, as of the last time I checked, he was in a stable condition.
The police men and women on our roads, are they giving bulletproof materials on them?
Yes, we have certain duties and certain accoutrements that come with them. These personnel that we know that were involved in this unfortunate incident were personnel detailed to the community policing unit, or they were detailed with the community policing unit, and as such, they do not carry weapons as their work. Then, secondly, too, they were not in bulletproof vests. We have different units and different groups that we all perform at certain points in time. So depending on the work we do, you are given some of vests, that's the bulletproof vest on.
But there are times we see our policemen and women in town. You don't see any weapon on them. And excuse me to say, some of them, I mean, some of these macho guys can easily knock one and you fall. And you're wondering, if such a person is not armed, what then will be the essence of the policing?
Yes, that is why I have said that we all have assigned roles. There are different units in the service, and there are individual assigned work. And per the work that you do, it will determine whether you deserve to hold a weapon or not. And this has been the practice over time. I don't know if per recent trend, some of these practices will be reviewed for certain decisions to be taken.
How can the public contribute in this latest incident, in your search for the perpetrators?
Yes. First of all, I must commend the general public so far for the amount of information they have shared with us since the incident broke out. You could see the zeal and also the cooperation from the general public volunteering certain information that the police were also moving on. Then again, with what we are experiencing now, it is clear that these people are very harmful in our society. And therefore, we may not be able to easily identify them. But what I can say is that sometimes if you know people so well, you will see their demeanor and posture whenever they have done something of this nature. And some of these things easily expose them. So in our dealings, in our day and daily activities, we should keep on observing as we have done. Some things like this come, and because of the public outcry, because of the various information out there, after a day or two, we hear that people, even among the same ones, sometimes help us to be able to arrest the perpetrators. And apart from that, we have also given certain numbers out by the police that will also, even if you don't want to come forward, would also entreat that whatever information you have, every suspicious information at all, if you do this, we are able to move on, and even if it's not successful, we are still not accepted, we will still continue in the lookout for each other.
The year has not been too good for our brothers and sisters in the police service. Somebody will call it a calamity. Is that in any way demoralizing you?
Yes, we've had a number of such incidents just in this year, a number of them, you know, in the same kind of trend. Sometimes you can see that it's somehow, you know, happening, and you wonder that your brother who has been involved, a brother or a comrade who has fallen, could have also been you. But I always say that in the course of our work, per our regimental orientation, we are always determined, you know, to go beyond our purpose and also do what man can even think of for the pursuit of constitutional mandate, and then again for the benefit of the general. general public. We shall continue to remain resolute, and I know that we will continue to pursue them to their hideouts, and we shall win the fight.
Right. May the Lord be with you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
ASP Ifia Tenge is the public relations officer of the Greater Accra Regional Police Command. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. Also on the line is a security analyst, Adeep Sani. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News. Hello? It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. We shall try and reestablish contact with Adeep Sani. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana.
It's probing, it's intrusive, yet exciting. Your daily news analysis program, Behind the News, is on Radio Ghana at 8 p.m. sharp, Monday to Friday. Join the crew and be part of all the interesting analysis and hard interviews on your exciting Behind the News. Also heard on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Sunrise FM 106.7 in Kofodia, Radio BAR 93.5 to 9, Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wa, Volta Star Radio 91.1 and 91.3 in Ho, Obonu FM 96.5 Tema, and Twin City Radio 94.7 in Sekendi Takrade. And remember, we are on GBC's unique FM 95.7, which is online via TuneIn Radio.
Welcome back. I understand we have Adeep Sani on the line. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
I'm sure you've heard of the shooting incident involving two policemen, broad daylight at La Paz. One will be asking if the dry, the fresh leaves are burning, what happens to the dry ones?
I didn't hear your last part, please.
This is like the fresh leaves are burning. What happens to the dry ones?
With regard to
the police and security, yes, security of our people.
Well, indeed. In recent years, the criminals have become more audacious. They've become very daring. I was watching a clip from the incident, and as I even speak with you, I'm even at the scene, just trying to assess what really went on and trying to get some information. And it almost looked like a Hollywood blockbuster, because some people found it hard to comprehend what was going on. It was until the first shot was fired that they realized what was really going on. And it's a wake-up call to us as a country. Fine, we live in a human society and we cannot completely nip crime in the bud, but to an appreciable level, we can, you know, manage the scourge. And it calls on us, I mean, it's a wake-up call on us, especially stakeholders and the security agencies. I think it's only common knowledge that police officers, even when they are not going on operation and they are performing their daily static police duties, should have a great deal of protection. At least they should have bulletproof vests like we have in, you know, other countries. They should be well armed to, as it were, confront threats that come their way as officers. Recently, I was reading the story about the gentleman who was arrested for kidnapping. And one of his victims indicated that the day they were being kidnapped, the kidnappers shot at them, you know, as if wanted to kill them. Later, when he found out from them, they said, oh, they thought his driver is a police officer. So because of the way they do, I mean, because of the nature of their job, they easily come under fire. They are always seen as a threat to these criminal activity, guys. And I think it's important that we give them much more attention and protection than they currently have. That notwithstanding, I think it's also important that the law should be enforced in the country. Trust me, if you are in traffic, it's now normal. It's a new normal to have the Okada boys, I mean, people riding motorbikes, not respecting, you know, the traffic rules. It's become a daily ritual. You are in traffic, then you see them, even when it's on red, they jump it, without, and nobody does anything. So the laws must be made to work. I mean, if you are riding at the wrong time of the night, you know, inconsistency with the law, you have to be dealt with. If you are riding an unregistered motorbike, you have to be dealt with. Because, you know, we seem to be accepting the level of indiscipline, the level of lawlessness festering in our societies as something normal. And I think it's important we did something about it. And I think it's a wake-up call, of course, to the general public to provide information. We should always be on the lookout. Now criminals have devised very innovative ways they carry out their activities. I know a lady who closed late from work after she had picked her children from school. When she got to her house, she left the engine running with her children, two children sleeping in the back of the vehicle. When she went to open the main gate, the criminals came and took the car with the kids, you know, and this is something that is very common. They come and wait for you outside your house, especially areas that are out of town, you know, bushy areas, and they easily perpetrate their crime and nothing is done about it. So I'm sure we would have to be extra circumspect. We would have to exercise due diligence in our daily activities. When you're coming your house and it's all dark from a distance, put a highlight on, make sure there's nobody hiding in the bush or lingering, you know, around your house. I think it's important we also spend on security, like CCTV cameras and tracking devices. I mean, I know sometimes we offer our budgets, but it's important that we invest in security because society is becoming more dangerous by the day.
Right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Very grateful, sir.
Thank you.
Hadeep Sane is a security analyst. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. And keep your messages coming on 0266-026-941. Moving on to our next story. The president nominee for the La Nkwantana Municipal Assembly, Jennifer Dede, has been confirmed amidst allegation of overvoting and other acts of alleged irregularities. Some of the assembly members insist the nominee failed to get the required number of votes to assume the position of municipal chief executive and have vowed to resist the decision. Behind the News looks at the issues, and joining us on the line is the presiding member for the La Nkwantana Municipal Assembly, Alhaji Ibrahim Faila. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, my brother, and good evening to your listeners.
The president nominee has been confirmed, and we understand some people in the assembly have a problem. Exactly what is the problem?
Thank you very much, my brother. The problem has to do with, as a presiding member, I write for bringing up the meeting together. What happened was that I wrote a letter that we are going to have a confirmation of our MC. So we did that yesterday morning. And then the nominee secured 8 votes out of 13. In normal terms, or for her to get the required two-thirds, she needs to get 9 votes. So she got 8, which means she did not qualify for the position. So after a motion has been tabled in the house and seconded, and then a prayer was said, we adjourned the meeting to an exit. So apparently, Madam Deputy Minister for Greater Accra Region, Honorable Elizabeth Saki, called me that, yes, Mr. Faila, I wanted to have a talk with you. So I said, okay, that's okay. So we go in, we sat in a different room, we spoke for a length, and she told me that to call the other members. I went out. Some of the other members were outside eating. So seriously, I also joined them to eat. So when I joined them, I came back and told her, no, they are coming. So I'll be with them just to eat something and come back. So when we are outside eating, we realize that there is an information to organize the rest of the 8 who voted yes to reconvene and have the process of the confirmation going. So our attention was on, so we quickly rushed in and we realized, no, this is what is happening. So they called a deputy minister and my coordinating director called upon one guy to act as presiding member, of which in the constitution of 1992 and the Act 936, there is nowhere that it spells out for a reconvening of such meeting, whereas a meeting has been brought to a closure. So we also joined in, and we realized, she mentioned the guy to come and act as a presiding. The guy also went there, and one of the guys said, let's make sure the presiding member starts here. So I came there, they decided, no, I shouldn't sit there. Even use the police and macho men on me. So seriously, I also sat as a floor member, which I'm comfortable with. So after that, what happened was that she called the electoral commissioner to conduct the process.
Who called the electoral commissioner?
The deputy regional minister.
Is the deputy regional minister part of the assembly?
She's not part of the assembly. She's a liaison between the assemblies and the local government. That is the act.
So is it a norm that a regional minister or a deputy minister can call for such an event to take place?
It is not a norm, and it's neither in the act or the 1992 constitution. It is nowhere. It is nowhere. And if I may even quote the standing orders of the assembly, part 14 spells out that it is only the presiding member who can call for such meetings.
Okay. So what happened next after the election, the voting?
Yes. So what happened next was that we came in and she called the electoral commissioner, our coordination director, said, "You must come and then continue your work." So we sat down and then he started calling the names of the voters. So they called, we all went and voted. The whole 13 of us, we all went and voted. So after the second round of the voting, they counted. I was just right in front of the box. They counted, the thing was still 8 yes and then 5 no, which means she still did not get the required 2/3. So I don't know what they whispered with Hobson Adoye, with the regional minister. And in presence of the, Dr. Nana Atuata, that is what is most shocking to some of us. Because this is a person that we think we are all emulating his life. Fine. So the whole thing happened. And then Officer Adoye collected ballot paper from the yeast and then Tom printed and put it in the box again. So over there, they realized it is overvoted. So I was telling the crowd, I quickly told the crowd, the gathering, that no, she secured 8/5 no. What we did, I told the regional deputy minister, as minister, what we need to do is that let's go in a private talk. If possible, we can even reconvene or come back to hold the meeting tomorrow, which is Friday, which is today. Which is Friday. That's Thursday. Today is Thursday. So we can go back. And she said, no. I said, madam, what we are doing is unconstitutional. It's illegal. So whilst I was challenging her, she was begging me in Ghana language, file a make double fight. Many of you want small. It's only one vote. Let's allow it and go. Ninka, madam, I don't have problem. The nominee in question, the nominee is more or less, let me say, because I know the uncle, is more or less, I'll say, my dear sister. But then, we don't need to do the unconstitutional thing. Let's do the constitutional thing so that nobody will take us from behind. Because whatever that is happening now, you have now sacked all these media men saying that you brought policemen from Greater Accra Regional Command, almost about 30 policemen. So they came and stood round over there, sacking, harassing me, molesting. So seriously, I also did not take it kind. It is an exchange between myself and then the macho men. Because the macho men were in the core, the police were in the core periphery, section of the line. And then the macho men were in the periphery, just to be harassing me, saying that if I'm not agreeing to whatever she's saying, therefore, they should harass and beat me up. So some of the macho men happens to be my junior brothers. And they told me, Fila, earlier month, Mubugako, so I beg you, they are, you leave. Means, she said we should beat you because you are denying her what she wanted to do. So we, as your brothers, we are only begging you, just allow her. She may get away today, but God willing, posterity will judge all of us.
So no. The woman has been confirmed.
I'm not going to allow this.
You are not going to allow. The woman has been confirmed as the municipal chief executive, and you are the presiding member. What is the way forward?
Seriously, yes. We also intend doing it, but you see, I don't want to be putting those things in air or on air. But the issue is that we are also taking a different step, because I think the necessary thing must be done. If you go back even to the standing orders section, part 16, clause 8, sub paragraph 8, it tells you clearly the president's nominee or the nominee must, if the nominee pulls more than 50%, fails to get the two-thirds majority,
Okay. Should
go back and come within 10 days.
Aladi, we want to thank you very much. We shall revisit this as and when you come out with your next line of action. But we have also on the line... We have on the line one of the assembly members, Abdul Aziz Yakubu. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much.
You are assembly member for which electoral area?
I'm an assembly member for Tatana electoral area.
Your MCE has been confirmed and that some of you have problems. What is the way forward?
In the first place, we know she did not have the two-thirds majority that gives the electoral commission to confirm her as the winner of this race. So the way forward, yes, we are planning the way forward. We are looking at it together as to what we are going to do about it. And I'm surprised. What I saw yesterday, I'm absolutely surprised what I saw yesterday.
What did you see?
Yes, what I saw yesterday was that after the voting, she had 8 and then 5 against. And I'm one of those who voted one of those who voted against her. And I wonder, you know, after the voting, what actually happened was, after the voting, a motion was tabled for the end of the business, and then a member seconded, and a prayer was set for the closure of the meeting. We left the place just to go and look for something and eat. All of a sudden, they started calling us in. That yes, of course, they are convening the meeting again.
Well, the presiding member has already given us that narration. So, why did you vote against her?
Okay, now in the first place, you see, we have 12 for this party. I'm a member, a very strong, energetic member of MPP. I'm a coordinator. Now, in the first place, I'm a coordinator and I am an assembly member. We started with this party since 1992.
But so if you are a member of the MPP and a coordinator at that, why will you disobey the president's nominee?
I'm not. You see, it is not for nothing that the law, the act said that when the president nominates somebody to any of the MMDA, definitely the assembly member should be there to confirm the person. That is what the act said. Yeah, that is why we are confirming the person. Either we confirm the person or reject the person. We have been, even since, right from our primaries to general election, ask whether we have seen this lady helping us to go around. All the house to house that we have made, we have not set us on her. And I'm one of those, you can get any of the council executive and ask. My problem with the day was that she did not toil for the party. In our constituency here, she did it, and we are not ready to release this seat that we've gotten from the NDC. We are not ready to give it back to NDC now.
But she is not contesting to become a member of parliament.
Because, you see, we know those who worked for this party too hard to win Imagina for 12 years. We've been there with that MP.
Okay.
Fortunately to us, we'll be able to work this 2016. And we had it.
All right. We want to thank you very much. Our time is up. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Abdulaziz Yakubu is a member of the Lankwantanai Municipal Assembly. The MCE for the assembly, Jennifer Dede, agreed to speak to us, but we've been calling her line. She is not answering, but she had agreed earlier to talk on this show. Some of your text messages. Property man Salifu from Tamale says, why is the civilian public manhandling the very people mandated to protect us? It sounds ridiculous. May the affected rest in peace. Drivers and road users should be very careful when on the verge of their... Okay, Jake Ernest Aye sent in that from Kaliu. I think drivers need more education because there are so many things drivers can do to avoid these accidents. Musa Najumbi sent in that. George, I want to go spiritual on the issue. Most of our policemen like doing things that are not right, and so curses from aggrieved people who have been unfairly treated can cause these. Monica comes in Navrungo. Monica, you should become a prophet. Mustafa in Tamale says, Madina Assemblyman has done well for confirming. I think Madina Assemblyman have done well by confirming their MCE nominee. This confirmation is in line with the president saying that he is in a hurry to speed up development in the country. Allah bless Nanadon. God help me congratulate the serving MP in the Ghana's parliament, Honorable Alban Bagwin, who is also celebrated by his colleagues for outstanding performance. He truly deserves that. Monica comes in Navrungum. What is happening in Ghana? God save us. George, I think it's high time Kumasi Asante Kotoko stopped traveling, okay, from Accra to Kumasi by road. May the soul of the policeman rest in peace. Caswell Aluk Noah sent in this from Kandiga. My condolence to the bereaved family of Thomas Kofi Asante of Kotoko Football Club. He's sending this from Nsawam Thomas. Good evening, George. The tragedy of Asante Kotoko is very worrisome. My condolence to the family. Dawuda Adele in Tamale. It is high time the government implemented the necessary policies, no matter the political impact. AU Farouk. Rafik AOT. Send in this from Dohinyili. Speedy recovery. May God protect us all. Amin. And Abdullah Elias, minister in Santani, Tolon District. What kind of calamity are we seeing in our police service? Unfortunately, our time is up. My producers have been Asibi Bangu Ikela, Seth Kuju Eya, John Pobi, Suel Nanama Jekum, and Philip Boateng. Patience, the Vlu Amwa was our sound engineer. I'm George Asikri. Good night.